The Reflection Cracked by Graham McNeil. Read by Jonathan Keeble. Chapter 1. He did not dream. He never dreamed. Yet this was inescapably a dream. It had to be. La Fenice was a forbidden place now, and Lucius knew better than to ignore the word of his Primarch. In the time before their awakening, such disobedience would have been foolhardy. Now, it was a death sentence. Yes, this was most definitely a dream. At least he hoped so. Lucius was alone, and he did not like to be alone. He was a warrior who thrived on the adoration of others, and this place was bereft of any admirers but the dead. Hundreds of bodies lay strewn around like gutted, piscine life forms, twisted by the manner of their death, and every face belied the horror of their mutilations and defilements. They had died in agony, yet had welcomed every touch of the blade, every clawed hand that burst eyeballs and tore out tongues. This was a theatre of corpses, yet it was not an unpleasant place in which to find himself walking. Though the dead surrounded him, La Fenice felt abandoned. It felt dark and empty, like a mausoleum in the darkest watches of the night. Life had once paraded before its audiences on the arched proscenium, its glorious vibrancy celebrated, its heroes lauded, and its absurdities mocked. But now, it was a bloody reflection of a time long past. The wondrous mural of Serena D'Angelis was all but invisible on the ceiling, its exotic depictions of ancient debaucheries hidden behind a pall of soot and smoke stains. Fires had burned here, and the tang of roasted fat and hair still hung as a scent on the air. Lucius barely noticed it, too faint and too dissipated to pique much of his interest. Lucius was unarmed, and he felt the lack of a weapon acutely. He was a swordsman without a sword, and it felt as though his limbs were incomplete. Neither was he clad in armour. His luxuriantly painted war plate had been recoloured in a manner more pleasing to the eye, its drab hues and pedestrian ornamentation exaggerated and embellished in a manner more appropriate to a warrior of his skill and standing. He was as close to naked as it was possible for a warrior to be. He shouldn't be here, and he looked for a way out. The doors were locked and sealed shut from the outside, as they had been after the Primarch had paid one last visit to La Fenice in the wake of the massacre of Ferus Manus and his allies. Fulgrim had ordered the doors sealed for all time, and none in the Emperor's Children had dared gainsay him. So why had he risked coming here, even if only in a dream? Lucius did not know, yet he felt as though he had been summoned to this place, as though an unheard yet insistent voice had been calling to him. It seemed as though it had been calling to him for weeks, but had only now grown enough in power to be heeded. If he had been summoned, then where was the summoner? Lucius moved deeper into the theatre, still keeping watch for a way out, but intrigued to see what had become of the rest of La Fenice. A pair of footlights flickered to life at the edge of the orchestra pit, reflecting their fitful glow from a golden-framed mirror that stood at the centre of the stage. Lucius had not noticed the mirror before now, and let his dreaming steps carry him towards it. He skirted the orchestra pit, where creatures woven from ruined flesh and dark light had made sport with the entrails of the musicians. The skins of those players were hung from music stands, their heads and limbs arranged like a bizarre orchestra of the damned on those few instruments that remained. Lucius vaulted onto the stage, the movement smooth and graceful. He was a swordsman, not a butcher, and his physique reflected that. His shoulders were broad, his hips narrow, and his reach long. The mirror beckoned him. as though an invisible cord stretched from its silver depths and reached deep inside his chest.
"I love mirrors," he had once heard Fulgrim say. "They let one pass through the surface of things."
But Lucius did not want to pass through the surface of anything. His perfection had been ruined by Loken's treacherous fist, and Lucius had finished the job with a straight razor and a scream that still echoed in his skull, if he listened hard enough. Or was that someone else screaming? It was hard to tell these days. Lucius did not want to look in the mirror, yet his steps carried him closer with every passing second. What would he see in such a mirror of dreams? Himself? Or something far worse? The truth. It reflected a single spot of light that appeared to have no source he could see. He thought this puzzling until he remembered that this was a dream where no logic could be counted as solid and no sight taken for granted. Lucius stepped in front of the mirror, but instead of the face he had tried so very hard to forget, he saw a handsome warrior with aquiline features, a strong tapered nose and high cheekbones that accentuated the golden green of his eyes. His hair was lacquered black and his lips full, giving him a smile that would have been arrogant had his skill been any less. Lucius reached up to his face and felt the smoothness of his skin, the unblemished perfection of it, like the brushed steel of a polished blade. "I was beautiful once," he said, and his reflection laughed to hear such vanity. Lucius balled a fist, ready to dash his mocking reflection to shards, but his twin did not match his movements, instead looking at a point somewhere over his right shoulder. In the depths of the mirror, Lucius saw the reflection of the incredible portrait of Fulgrim that hung on the pediment over the splintered ruin of the proscenium. Like his own face, it did not match his memory of the thing. Where before it had been a majestic piece of incredible potency and power, its outlandish colours and vibrant texture stimulating every sense with its sheer daring, now it was simply a portrait. Its colours were bland, its lines uninspired, and the subject made small and unremarkable, such as any mortal journeyman painter might work with oils or watercolours. Yet for all that it was a prosaic thing now, Lucius saw the eyes had been rendered with exquisite skill, capturing a depth of pain, suffering and agony that was almost too much to bear. Since apothecary Fabius had worked dark transformations upon his flesh, it was a rare stimulus that piqued any interest in Lucius for more than a moment. Yet he felt himself drawn into the portrait's eyes, hearing a plaintive cry that echoed from a time and place beyond understanding. Wordless and edged with a madness that could only come from an eternity of confinement, the eyes were a mute plea for the release of oblivion. Lucius felt himself drawn into the eyes of the portrait as something stirred within him, a primal presence that had only recently awoken and shared a kinship with the reflected image. The glassy surface of the mirror rippled like the surface of a pool, as though it too sensed that shared heritage. Tremors were rising from somewhere impossibly deep within the mirror. Unwilling to face what might rise from the mirror's depths, Lucius reached for his swords, unsurprised that they were now belted to his waist and that he was fully attired in his battle armour. The blades were in his hand in an instant, and he swung them at the mirror in a scissoring arc. It shattered into a thousand spinning pieces of razored glass, and Lucius screamed as they sliced into his perfect face, carving the meat and bone to ugly rawness. Over his own scream, he heard a scream of frustration that dwarfed his own. It was the cry of someone who knows their torment will be never-ending. Lucius awoke instantly, his gen-hanced body switching from sleep to wakefulness in the blink of an eye. He reached for the swords he kept beside his bunk and was on his feet a second later. His chambers were brightly lit, as they always were now, and he swept his blades around in an effort to locate anything out of place that might presage danger. Garish paintings, symphonic discordias, and bloody trophies taken from the black sands of Istvan V filled his chamber. A bull-headed sculpture taken from the Gallery of Swords sat next to the thigh-bone of an alien creature he had killed on 28-2. The long, keenly edged blade of an Eldar sword shrieker shared space with the blade limb of a clayed creature he'd killed on murder. Yes, everything was as it should be, and he relaxed a fraction. He saw nothing out of the ordinary, and spun his swords in an unconscious display of incredible skill as he sheathed them in the gold and onyx scabbards hanging on the edge of his bunk. His breath came quickly, his muscles burned, and his heart beat a rapid tattoo on his ribs, as though he had exerted himself in the training cages against the Primarch himself. The sensation was wondrously pleasurable, yet was gone almost as soon as it came. Aching disappointment touched Lucius, as it so often did when those sensations that raised more than a flicker of interest faded. He reached up to touch his face, relieved and repulsed at the hard ridges of scar tissue crisscrossing his once perfect features. He had defaced his wondrous visage with knives and glass and blunt metal, but Loken had made the first imperfection, the cut that had torn him open. Lucius had sworn a mighty oath on the Primarch's silver-bladed sword that the lunar wolf's face would be the mirror of his own. But Loken was gone, cindered ashes drifting on the mournful winds of a dead world. That silver-bladed sword was now his, a gift from Primarch Fulgrim that had seen his star rise within the Legion to rival that of Julius Caesarum and Marius Verusian. The first captain had offered him new chambers, closer to the beating heart of the Legion, but Lucius had chosen to remain in the quarters assigned to him long ago. In truth, he despised Caesarum, and his rejection of the man's offer had given him a moment of delicious frisson as he saw resentment flare in his ruined, molten features. Lucius relished Caesarum's anger and felt a flicker of pleasure at the memory. He had no wish to be part of the command structure, such as it was now, and simply wished to hone his already phenomenal skills to ever greater heights of perfection. Some of the Legion had abandoned that quest as a reminder of their previous existence as Imperial lapdogs, for what need had they to prove their perfection to the Emperor? Lucius knew better. Though few understood the truth of the repugnantly seductive creatures that had birthed and gorged themselves upon the terror and noise of the Maraviglia, Lucius suspected they were aspects of elemental powers that were older and more generous with their blessings than anything the Imperium had to offer. His perfection would be his devotions to them. Lucius sat on the edge of his bunk and strove to recall the substance of his dream. He could picture the ruined interior of La Fenice and the terrible gaze of the painting above the blood-slick stage. But for the eyes, it had been Fulgrim as he had been before the Legion had taken its first steps upon the path of sensation. And as full of pain as they had been, there was a familiarity to them that had been strangely absent in the days since Istvan V. That battle had changed Fulgrim, but no one in the Legion appeared to notice the change save Lucius. He had sensed something indefinably different about his beloved Primarch, something impossible to pinpoint, but there nonetheless. Lucius had sensed something awry, like a harp string a fraction out of tune, or a picked image not quite in focus. If any shared his opinion, they kept their counsel, for the Primarch did not take kindly to questioning, nor was he merciful in his displeasure. The Fulgrim that had returned from the bloody sands of the dead world had none of the Phoenician's wit or insight, and when he spoke of past battles, his tales had the hollow ring of one who had heard of their fury, but taken no part in their winning. The feeling that he had been summoned to La Fenice for a reason would not leave him, and Lucius looked up into the face of the painting that hung opposite his bunk. It was the last thing he saw before he took his infrequent bouts of rest, and the first thing he saw upon waking. It was a face that haunted him and inspired him in equal measure. His own. Serena D'Angelus had painted the portrait for him, a specially commissioned piece that had seen her delve further and deeper into her soul than any mortal should for perfection. Only the Emperor's children dared reach for such heights, but where the Legion had transcended, she had been destroyed. His ravaged features stared back at him from the golden frame with the one thought that had been gnawing at his dreams and waking life like an itch that could never be scratched. Though it seemed impossible, the nagging thought would not leave him. Whatever wore Fulgrim's face and moved in his flesh was not Fulgrim. The route to the Heliopolis had changed since Istvan V. The great avenue of towering onyx columns had once been a magisterial processional along the spine of the starship. But now it was a howling place of bedlam, petitioners and supplicants who begged for a glimpse of the Primarch's magnificence camped in the shadow of its pillars, where once golden warriors with long spears had stood. In times past, such obscene flotsam would have been turned away, but now they were welcomed, and a tide of mewling wretches whose devotion fed Fulgrim's grandiosity choked every passageway of the ship. Lucius despised them, but in his more honest moments he knew it was only because they did not chant his name with such high esteem. The Phoenix Gate was gone, torn down in the frenzy that followed the Maraviglia and the battle on Istvan V. The eagle, once carried by the carven emperor, was broken and part molten from the melter blasts that had brought it down. The frenzy of defacement had almost destroyed the pride of the emperor, until Fulgrim had put a stop to the madness engulfing the ship and restored a form of order. Lucius laughed aloud at the mockery of their flagship's name, the sound like a banshee's screech that made the naked, skinless devotees wail with pleasure. Many in the Legion, Julius Caesarion loudest of all, had clamoured for the ship's name to be changed, along with that of the Legion, in echo of the Sons of Horus, but the Primarch had denied them all. All ties to their past loyalty were to remain, as spiteful reminders to their enemies that they fought against brothers. Horus Lupercal had favoured their legion after the death of Ferus Manus, and for a time the legion had flown high on a cresting tide of euphoria and sensation. But, like all tides, that fickle euphoria had receded and left the Emperor's children with a gaping emptiness in their lives. Some, like Lucius, had filled that void with the pursuit of martial excess, while others had indulged desires and secret vices kept hidden until now. Portions of the ship descended into anarchy, as all bonds of control were slipped, but, before long, order was restored and a semblance of discipline enforced. It was a strange kind of discipline, one that rewarded outlandish behaviour as much as punished it. In some cases, the two were one and the same. For all that the legionaries strove to find new meaning and pursue their newfound devotions with all their hearts, they were a force of warriors that needed a command structure to function. They were still warriors, albeit ones without a war. Tasking orders had dispatched the Legion from Istvan, but the Primarch had shared none of the War Master's commands with his legion. No one knew to which war zone they were bound, or which foe would next feel their blades, and that ignorance was galling. Not even the senior warlords of the Legion could claim such knowledge, but the Primarch's summons to the Heliopolis was sure to put an end to the Legion's ignorance. Lucius gripped the hilt of the Lair sword as he saw Eidolon marching towards him along a connecting corridor. The Lord Commander hated him,
and never passed over an opportunity to remind Lucius that he was not truly one of them. Eidolon's skin was waxy and pale, pulled tightly across the distended orbits of his eyes. Wire-taut tendons throbbed at his neck, and the bones of his lower jaw moved with the liquid detachment of a serpent. His armor was painted in garish stripes of vivid purple and electric blue, the colors riotously applied in a striking pattern that owed nothing to any design of camouflage, and made Lucius's eyes strain to assimilate what he was seeing. Such vivid colorings were now the norm among the Legion, with each warrior striving to outdo his fellows in sheer extravagance and ostentation. Lucius had only recently begun to ornament his armor, its plates strikingly adorned with madly screaming faces stretched beyond all recognition. The inner face of each shoulder guard was notched with jagged metal teeth that pricked and scored his flesh with every movement of his arms. The depth and angle of each tooth was carefully chosen to inflict the most scintillating pains, should he choose to wield his blades in anything other than the most sublime manoeuvres. Eidolon drew in a great sucking breath, the bones of his jaw seeming to writhe beneath the skin and link together before he spoke.
"Lucius," he said, spitting the word at a pitch and cadence that sent an altogether pleasing clash of discordance into the swordsman's brain. "You are an unwelcome sight, traitor."
"And yet, here I am," said Lucius, ignoring Eidolon and pressing onwards. The Lord Commander caught up with him and made to grasp his arm. Lucius spun away, and his swords were at Eidolon's throat in a blur of silver too fast to follow. The Laren blade and his Terran sword rested to either side of Eidolon's neck. With one flick of his wrists, he could decapitate the man. Lucius saw the relish in Eidolon's face, the pulsing beat of the hawser-like tendon in his neck, and the dilated black holes of his pupils.
"I take your head like I took Charmosian's," he said, "if I didn't think you'd enjoy it."
"I remember that day," replied Eidolon. "I swore I'd kill you for that. I still might."
"I don't think you will," said Lucius. "You're not good enough. No one is or ever will be."
Eidolon laughed, the gesture opening his face up like a tearing wound.
"You are arrogant, and one day the Primarch will tire of you. Then you will be mine."
"Maybe he will, and maybe he won't. But it will not be today," said Lucius,
dancing away from Eidolon with graceful steps. It was good to draw his sword in anger and feel the gentle pressure of their sharpened edges resting on flesh. He wanted to kill Eidolon, for the man had been a thorn in his side for as long as he'd known him, but it would not do to rob the Primarch of his most zealous devotee.
"Why not today?"
demanded Eidolon.
"It is the eve of battle," said Lucius. "And that's the one day I don't kill anyone."